So as I say, Pastor Mitch is probably right now shooting some of your very own children. You know, as a youth pastor for 24 some odd years, he made the choice to become a senior pastor and to move forward. But I don't think he could ever separate himself from the youth pastor. His love for children is just too strong, and I think that's one of the things that we love so much about Mitch. And I'm talking to you today about some of those choices we all have to make. Because when we read Ruth this morning, when we read that, and I thank you, Kurt, I asked him this morning, hey, you know, could you read this for me? It's a lot to read. There's even some tough pronunciations in there where I would have had some trouble, and I didn't want to do all that and then speak on top of it. And I just asked him this morning, and he stepped up. I thought he did a great job, so thank you very much for doing that reading for me. And when I read this, you know, I was reading Ruth, and I was trying to figure out, we're doing the series Weathering Life, and we've talked about a lot of things. You know, Pastor Mitch has hit a number of topics, and I know he's got a couple more to go. And I was thinking about, how are we weathering life? And I think a lot of it has to do with the choices we make. And I read a quote once that said, I've come to realize this, that my life is not made by the dreams that I dream, but the choices that I make. I'm going to repeat that. I've come to realize that my life is not made by the dreams that I dream, but the choices that I make. And I thought, wow, that's very simple, but at the same time, it can be very profound when you really start to think about it. And I was reading Ruth, and I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, wow, you know, when you think about different things in the Bible, about people who have weathered life, you know, the first thing you want to think about is Job, obviously. And Job, boy, did he have to weather some life. But I was looking at this, and I was thinking about Ruth, and I thought, you know what? Ruth and Naomi, boy, they had to weather some life. They had some difficult situations. And I was looking at what made this story so great. And it came to me that it was the choices that they made that makes this story so great. I mean, you will have plenty of choices in your life. You all made the choice just to come to church today. Hopefully you won't regret it too much. But you have to decide sometimes between what it is that you want and maybe what it is that is best for somebody else. What's best for you or what's best for them? Sometimes that can be a difficult choice. What criteria are you going to use to make that choice? If we look at Ruth, after their husbands died, Ruth and Orpah were faced with a big choice. They had the choice to either head back to Moab, stay where they were, or to go with Naomi. Their mother-in-law told them to go. She said she didn't want them to feel any obligation to her. You know, don't feel bad for me. It's okay. Go. I don't want you to stay just for my sake. Even though she had lost a lot more than they did, she lost her husband and she lost both of her sons. That's quite a blow. Orpah and Ruth, and I keep wanting to say Oprah, and if I do, I'm not trying to pull a David Letterman here, but if I do, I'm sorry. They could either stay with Naomi and try and go back to Judea, to Bethlehem, or they could stay in Moab where they were before, where they knew the people, where they were used to the lifestyle, okay? And so they had this choice right there. That's the first choice. Now, they understood this fact, too. If they went with Naomi, they were pretty much guaranteed being widows the rest of their life. Jewish men did not marry outside of their culture. They were foreign women. This was not normally done. But if they stayed there, they had a much better chance of finding another husband. Okay? So they had some incentive for staying there. Okay? Ruth chose to serve the needs of Naomi rather than herself. Even though she probably thought, you know what, I'd have it a little better if I stayed here. You have to understand, Ruth was a beautiful woman. If she stayed, she probably wouldn't have had a problem finding a husband. She probably wouldn't have had a problem lining up suitors. This would have probably been pretty easy for her. But she didn't do that. See, there's a difference here too. At this time, Moab was like the Sodom and Gomorrah during the time of Judges when this was written. This was a place where, I want to say that a lot of idolatry took place. They worshipped a lot of different gods. There was a lot of moral corruption. There was a lot of promiscuity. And Naomi, through her husband and her sons, introduced Ruth and Orpah to God. They introduced her to the one true living God. And that changed them. So Ruth chose to stay with Naomi. Orpah chooses to go back. Starting with this first choice, we will see that Ruth goes on not only to find a husband and be very well taken care of and blessed, but she also becomes an ancestor to Jesus Christ, one of the most pivotal lineages, or the most pivotal lineages in the history of the world. Orpah, on the other hand, we don't even hear about. Basically, she becomes inconsequential. So this one small decision, this one act of putting Naomi first, starts a chain of events. This one choice. Think about the choices that you have in your life every day. Think about how each and every choice can build on another. And you look at this one choice that Ruth starts with, and the choice to follow Naomi, how it changes her life. Now, I don't even think that's the first choice, though. I think Naomi had the first choice. Because if you look at it, Naomi, she had a choice. She's in a position where she just lost her husband. She just lost both of her sons. She's a widow in a foreign land. I'd imagine she'd feel pretty angry. Wouldn't you think so? I'd imagine she'd feel a little resentful towards God. I'd imagine she'd feel a little bitter towards God. She has a choice right there. Does she go back to Bethlehem? Does she return to the God she knows and loves? Or does she stay where she's at? I'd imagine that many of us, would sit there and think, you know what? God has abandoned me. Now she has stated later on, if we look at it, she states, Ruth 1:20, when she goes back to Bethlehem, she states, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Naomi means pleasant. That's what her name meant. She was pleasant. Mara means bitter. And she says that the Lord Almighty has made her life very bitter. So she is feeling these things. She feels anger. She feels bitter. She feels resentment. And she has a choice. She could drink from this very bitter, bitter cup that's been handed to her. Or she could not. She has this choice. She chooses, first choice, to go back to Bethlehem. Now remember, Moab is not a really moralistic, wonderful place. It is filled with the things of the world. If you want self-gratification, if you want the pleasures of the world, if you want the party life, then Moab is the place to be. If you want to drown your sorrows, that's where you want to be. That's where the things of the world are. She's there. She could do that. She could turn her back on God. She could take the things of the world, and that's where she could stay. She chose not to. And I propose to you, how many of us have turned our back and looked to the things of the world when things went bad rather than to God? How much easier is it to look to the things of the world to try and solve our problems rather than to the Lord? This is a tough choice, and I think it's often overlooked. Naomi chooses to head back to Bethlehem, a widow with no money, with no support, and walk back into that town. I'm going to take this a step further. Ruth offers to go with her. Ruth is a beautiful woman. She's young. She says, I'm going to go with you. I love you. I'm not going to depart from you. And we look at this, and if you look at what Ruth says, Ruth 1:16 through 17, it says, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Wow. What a pronouncement. What a loyalty. Now, when you look at that, you think, wow. You know, that is really saying something. And you can see that your God will be my God. Ruth is taking this and she's saying, I want your God. Because she's been exposed to God. But remember that bitter cup Naomi has sitting there? Had she have drank from that bitter cup, had she have taken that into her soul, had she had started feeling that doubt, that anger, that resentment, that jealousy, how easy of it would have been to her not to have heard the truth in Ruth's words? Could she have easily said to Ruth, oh, you're just a gold digger. I see what you're doing. You want me to get you back into Jerusalem because you heard that the Lord has provided favor in Jerusalem again. People there are prospering, and you want me to take you back there so you can find yourself a rich Jewish husband. What's my chances of finding another husband if I bring her back? Look at her. Look at how pretty she is. I don't want to bring her. Imagine the blessings Naomi would have missed out on had she refused to take Ruth back with her. If she would have drank from the bitter cup, where would we be then? See, that was choice number two. She kept her heart open. When Ruth said, I want to go with you, let me go, she accepted those words as true. She took them for what they were, and she did not let that bitterness taint her. I think that is so important. Most people just miss that. It is so easy for us when we start feeling down, when we start letting the things of the world get us down, and we start filling ourselves with that anger, Sometimes we miss the blessings from those around us who are standing right there trying to give it to us. You close your own heart off. How many blessings have you missed? Because you drank from the wrong cup. So, Ruth, she knew she was going to struggle in this new land. And I think she had a few choices to make too. As I said, she was a beautiful woman. There's a problem with that, though, too. When you're a beautiful woman in a strange land, sometimes that can bring unwanted attention. She had to worry for her safety. She didn't have anybody to protect her. She had to work out in the fields, gleaning to get her food. And that means that she was out there. And this is basically what it means. They had workers out in the field. They were harvesting all the crops. They would take everything off of the fields. And then they had other women out there making sure that the men had water, they had lunch, they had stuff, and then they were going out picking up extra stuff, making sure they didn't miss anything. She came back at the end after everybody moved on and on her hands and knees digging through the ground for any little piece of grain that they might have missed. This is like the last little possible scraps. That's what she's doing. She's basically digging through for any possible little leftover. Imagine all day doing that, trying to get one little cupful, just something to make a loaf of bread. Doing that all day. What's Naomi doing? I don't say. She's not out there with her. But she's doing it. She's working. She's providing for her mother-in-law. This choice in itself brings a blessing. Again, she's putting her mother-in-law first. Boaz tells her, I think it's 2:11, 11 and 12. It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. The Lord repay your work. I know we didn't read that. We didn't get that far. But this man sees her. He sees how diligent she's working. He hears the stories. The fact that she could have went back to Moab. The fact that she didn't. The fact that she stayed with her. The fact that Naomi is back at home doing whatever it is that she has to do there. But Naomi's going out, Ruth is going out to the fields day after day after day, digging through the dirt, just doing whatever she can to get whatever little bit she can, taking it home to her mother-in-law. Again, this is a beautiful woman. I'd imagine had she wanted to, she could have found another way to gain a little something. But instead, she's being faithful to God because she has learned from her mother-in-law and through her husband when she was alive what was proper. Boaz sees this and he recognizes her choices as good and honorable, and he offers her some help. And he ends up leaving, telling his workers, leave a couple stalks behind for her. It's a little charity. He even gives her lunch. You know what she does? She eats part of the lunch, she wraps up the rest of it, and takes it home to Naomi. When Naomi hears this, and she hears there's a kind, gentle man named Boaz, who is a relative of theirs, she gives Ruth some advice. She gives Ruth some advice. And she starts to tell her how she can win him over. And I thought about this a little bit, and I said, you know what? This is another check in Naomi's box. This is another choice that she made. Because I like to think that Naomi was a pretty woman as well. And I like to think that when she said earlier, when she was talking to both Orpah and Ruth, she told them, if I had more children now, would you wait for them to grow up? Even if she found another husband and she had children. I'm assuming then by that she means she could. So she's still within childbearing years. She could have a husband. She could have children. She could probably find happiness again. And I'm thinking Boaz is probably more akin to her age. So why didn't Naomi doll herself up, go to the threshing floor, and do what she told Ruth to do? I think that would have been the first thought of many people in our society today when they heard about somebody who was so generous and kind. She didn't. She made the choice. She didn't act for herself. She was concerned for Ruth. And that concern for her daughter-in-law, that love she passed on, she sent Ruth to Boaz. And we know what happened. We know the blessing that came out of that. For some of you that may not know the story, I'll tell you, she went there. Naomi told her to go to Boaz when he was threshing his grain to the threshing floor. And what that means is on the threshing floor, they take this grain and they beat it on the threshing floor and they separate the grain from the chaff. The grain's the good stuff. The chaff is the stuff that's useless. It usually gets bundled up and burned. So they're separating the good from the bad, if you will. Okay? She gets herself dolled up. She goes down there, and according to Jewish custom, she lays down by his feet, uncovers his feet, waits to be noticed, falls asleep there till he wakes up and finds her. And he asks her, Lord, if I found favor in your eyes, cover me with your garment. In other words, put something over me, shelter me. It's a marriage proposal in a way. Show me that you will take care of me. He's touched. Because obviously she could have been running after richer men. She could have been chasing after younger men. She could have made a lot of choices. He's touched. He chose her. He's also touched that she followed Jewish custom as a foreigner. He's also touched that she did it so properly. She held her honor. All of these choices lead up to this. And now she's laying there on the threshing floor where you separate the good from the bad. And he tells her, he makes a promise to her. He says, you know what? I would love to be your redeemer. I would love to be the man to marry you. I don't have that right. There's somebody closer than me that has that right. But if he won't do it, I promise you, in the name of the Lord, I will. The next day he goes out. He talks to the relative who's closer. And he makes the offer. He says, look, do you want this woman? They talk about it, finds out, no, you can have her. He sticks to his word, and he marries her. Boaz, he could have taken advantage of her there. He could have promised her a number of things. He could have said a number of things, and he could have not done it. Boaz was a man of his word. Boaz kept his promise. This was his choice to do. Imagine, there have been many of us who have felt at one time or another that we have been beaten down, like we are being thrown on the threshing floor. And we feel beaten. You get hard times in your life. The question is, do you want to be the grain or do you want to be the chaff? Because the chaff is getting burned. Make no mistake about it. And it's the choices that you make that are going to decide which you're going to be. And I love the fact in this story that it is the fact that they do not let the bitterness and the anger and the resentment from everything that they've been through infect their lives and change their decisions. And yet they still take all of that in, and even though they're angry, and even though Naomi says, you know what, yes, I'm angry, I'm resentful, yes, call me Mara, for my life is bitter, but does she act that way? When it comes down to the fact that she has to sit there and give advice to Naomi and say, look, this is what you do. I want you to have a better life. She doesn't hold back. She doesn't withhold her advice. She gives it freely. And she wants better for her daughter-in-law. And it is through that giving, through that love, that the blessings come back. James 1:16 and 17 states, do not be deceived. Every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father. See, once we start to doubt God's goodness, once we start to take that bitter cup and we start to drink from it, then we start to question His goodness. Because sometimes His best gifts are the trials He puts us through to make us more mature or to give us the chance to show our character, to show love to another person. Because it's love above all that weathers life. Sometimes God puts us on the threshing floor. We feel like crying out, yes, my name's Mara. My life is bitter. But if Naomi didn't make the choices she made, and Ruth didn't make the choices that she made, then we wouldn't be able to sit here right now, talk directly to our Father, because Jesus Christ made the choice that He made. Maybe because I'm an English teacher, or I was, and I've done this a couple times in the past, I usually find some kind of a story or something that I like to read to you to drive my point home, and I've done that again. I have found something that I want to read to you. And I used to do this with my classes all the time, so I guess I'm just kind of following suit. So bear with me as I read you a little story that I think helps illustrate the point of choice in our lives. He placed one scoop of clay upon another until a form lay lifeless on the ground. All of the garden's inhabitants paused to witness the event. Hawks hovered, giraffes stretched, trees bowed, butterflies paused on petals and watched. You will love me, nature, God said, because I made you that way. You will obey me, universe, for you were designed to do so. You will reflect my glory, skies, for that is how you were created. But this one will be like me. This one will be able to choose. All were silent as the Creator reached into himself and removed something yet unseen, a seed. It is called choice, the seed of choice. Creation stood in silence and gazed upon the lifeless form. an angel spoke, but what if he chooses not to love the Creator finished? Come, I will show you. Unbound by today, God and the angel walked into the realm of tomorrow. There, see the fruit of the seed of choice, both sweet and bitter. The angel gasped at what he saw. Spontaneous love, voluntary devotion, chosen tenderness. Never had he seen anything like these. He felt the love of the Adams. He heard the joy of Eve and her daughters. He saw the food and the burdens shared. He absorbed the kindness and marveled at the warmth. Heaven has never seen such beauty, my Lord. Truly, this is your greatest creation. Ah, but you've only seen the sweet. Now witness the bitter. A stench enveloped the pair. The angel turned in horror and proclaimed, "What is it?" The Creator spoke only one word: selfishness. The angel stood speechless as they passed through the centuries of repugnance. Never had he seen such filth, rotten hearts, ruptured promises, forgotten loyalties. Children of the creation wandering blindly in lonely labyrinths. This is the result of choice? The angel asked. Yes. They will forget you. Yes. They will reject you. Yes. They will never come back. Some will, most won't. What will it take to make them listen? The Creator walked on in time, further and further into the future, until he stood by a tree that would be fashioned into a cradle. Even then, he could smell the hay that would surround him. With another step into the future, he paused before another tree. It stood alone, a stubborn ruler on a bald hill. The trunk was thick, the wood was strong. Soon it would be cut. Soon it would be trimmed. Soon it would be mounted on the stony brow of another hill. And soon he would be hung on it. He felt the wood rub against a back he did not yet wear. "Will you go down there?" the angel asked. "I will." "Is there no other way?" "There is not." "Would it be easier not to plant the seed? Wouldn't it be easier not to give the choice?" "It would," the Creator said slowly, "but to remove the choice is to remove the love." He looked around the hill and foresaw a scene. Three figures hung on three crosses, arms spread and head fallen. They moaned with the wind. Men clad in soldiers' garb sat on the ground near the trio. They played games in the dirt and laughed. Men clad in religion stood off to one side. They smiled, arrogant and cocky. They had protected God, they thought, by killing this false one. Women clad in sorrow huddled at the foot of the hill, speechless, faces tear-streaked, eyes downward. One put her arm around the other and tried to lead her away. She wouldn't leave. "I will stay," she said softly. "I will stay." "It must be done," he said, and withdrew. But as he stepped in time, he heard the cry that he would someday scream, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He wrenched at tomorrow's agony. The angel spoke again. It would be less painful. The Creator interrupted softly, but it wouldn't be love. They stepped into the garden again. The Maker looked earnestly at the clay creation. A monsoon of love swelled up within him. He had died for the creation before he had made him. God's form bent over the sculptured face and breathed. Dust stirred on the lips of the new one. The chest rose, cracking the red mud. The cheeks fleshened. A finger moved and an eye opened. But more incredible than the moving of the flesh was the stirring of the spirit. Those who could see the unseen gasped. Perhaps it was the wind that said it first. Perhaps it was the star, that moment that it was made, that made it blink ever since. Maybe it was left to the angel to whisper it. "It looks like, it appears so much like, it is him." The angel wasn't speaking of the face, the features, or the body. He was looking inside at the soul. "It is eternal," another gasped. Within the man, God had placed a divine seed, a seed of his self, a seed of choice. The God of might had created earth's mightiest, and the one who had chosen to love had created one who could love in return. Now it's our choice. I encourage you today that when you think about life, when you think about your troubles, when you think about the ways of the world and the things that are pressing down upon you, I encourage you to think about the choices you have in front of you. You have the choice to serve an all-powerful, mighty God. And that God will bless you in more ways than you know are possible. You have no way of knowing all of the ways that he will bless you in the future throughout your lives. So if there's one way that you're going to get through life, it is going to be through love and through selfless choices. And I encourage you to continue to try to make those choices. If you'll stand.